Okay, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 22. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Gyanati Marandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksuran Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripashindu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namah Pankajanabhaya Namah Pankajamalane Namah Pankajanetraya Namaste Pankajangrahe. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool. So, greetings from Mayapur. I'm at the home of Jagadish and Yugala, and it really is a home. You know, from my room, I can actually see the yoga pit, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So were the prayers of Queen Kunti. And I think I put the context of this before, but I'll repeat it. The sages of Naimisharanya asked various questions. They're Trikala Gya, they can see past, present, and future. And they can see the Kali Yuga coming. It's just as someone I heard in New York, it was very, very warm out. But if, you know, you look a week or so down the road, you know that it's the winter time and it's going to get cold. So you may prepare. You may chop some wood. You may put plastic by the windows to create insulation. So there's things that you do that will prepare, or sometimes there's a hurricane warning. And it hasn't happened, but you know it's going to come. You board up the things. Maybe, you know, sometimes there's evacuation, etc. So there are cycles, and cycles can be predicted. So the winter season, the Kali Yuga, the sages of Naimisharanya see that that's approaching, knowing that Krishna has just left the planet. And they asked, you know, now that Krishna has left the planet, where will knowledge and religion be preserved? And Sutta, the guru, answered, it was the Bhagavatam. that he heard it, and then he had realized it, and he was going to explain it. Of course, that's significant, because when one hears something, realizes it means you not only hear the truth, you actually see the truth. You have a depth of understanding of it. Because sometimes we can understand the truth but not see a truth. I always give the example of you're not the body. We know it's true, but do we see it's true? And how easily we get upset based on the bodily platform of life, and how much we get disturbed when the world doesn't move our way based on the bodily platform of life. So we don't yet see the truth. But when someone sees the truth, understands the truth very, very deeply, then they can communicate the truth. I've explained this point many, many times, how communication entails explaining something in the language and words and frame of reference of one's audience, which entails changing the form of the message, perhaps in which you heard it, in such a way that the message is presented in another form to suit the audience. Now, that takes realization. So it's very exciting when someone has realized knowledge, because then they can really help you understand truth, and the truth shall set you free. So the sages in Naimisharanya are excited, and this is a little repetitive, but this is somehow where I'm going today. In a new environment, and there's a new technology, I don't even know if the audience is necessarily hearing, because anyway, I hope you're hearing the class. But what happens is, to give the class, I have to get a particular phone and phone service to make it affordable. But the way India works, when you move to a new place, there are extra charges. And literally speaking, the price of the call goes up about 10 times. So this is the first time I'm actually making the call through the computer. And initially I got some response that people could hear me. So I'm praying that that's the case. So I'm kind of trying to grasp, you know, where to begin. That's anyway how I begin. And it's, anyway, I'll repeat it again. And they asked about the protagonists, the speakers, and the hearers of the Bhagavatam. The three are Vyasadev, Sukadev, and Maharaj Prickett. And they each have unique characteristics. And now he's explaining the unique characteristics of Maharaj Prickett. Great in his birth, great in his life, and great in his death, and there was nothing lacking in his administration. So he's beginning, the Swami begins to explain this, about he's great in his birth, but why is he great in his birth? Because there was a samskara, an impression made in his consciousness when he was young, a good impression, an attachment and experience that makes one seek good things. So he had the greatest impression in the consciousness, and the impression was of God, because when at the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the son of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama, tried to abort his mother's womb. A weapon, an atomic weapon that could be specifically targeted or directed to a particular place, and was directed to the womb, and it's usually not counteractable. Not normally can't be counteracted. Then Krishna, to save his devotee, who is his mother is calling him, Krishna, Krishna. Anyway, the mother is calling. She's a great devotee. She's dependent on God. This is the... Wow. Thanks, Henry. Thank you so much. It encourages me. I just got a message from Henry that you're hearing me clearly. And that really means a lot, because it inspires me that that's great. And it's encouraging, too, because this new medium... So the greatest impression in the womb is auspiciousness is connected with God, connection with God. Because what we are is in relationship with God. And when we connect with reality, goal of life is connect with reality, and connecting with reality is feeling reality, and because reality is a person, feeling reality is feeling our relationship with that person, which is prema pramartha mahan. That's the goal of life, to actually experience that love. That's the priyojana. The priyojana of life, the goal of life, is to realize the truth. And realizing the truth, feel the truth, which is our relationship with the truth, which is sambandha. It's a relationship. It's one of love, and it's an energy called prema, or love. And to enter into that is the highest perfection of life. To enter into that relationship. So the greatest fortune is to be inspired, to have faith in the right objective. Most of problems in life is having faith in the wrong objective, thinking that social media will make me happy, thinking that alcohol will make me happy, thinking that power will make me happy. Think me that simply sensual stimulation will make me happy. Today I took lunch at the house of Janava and Mahatma here in Mayapur. My disciple Janava, my godbrother Mahatma. And their daughter is 14. And she was in a school here that really gave her the right samskara. It really attracted her to healthy things. So she's a teenager of 14, and what they may do. I'm busy, but she's busy. I asked her, I talked to her, she's busy all day. In what? Well, on Thursday she goes and serve panchatattva by, I don't know, brushing the hair of the deities. Different things, and they're all connected with Krishna. So the school gave her devotional experiences in such a way that she actually has the samskara, the attraction of the objective, that happiness is devotional service, and it's so healthy. You can see that is her objective. So how fortunate is that? And for her, it was Purva Samskara. It was an impression from previous lives. Because 4 years ago, when she was 10 or 9 or 10 years old, and her parents visited Mayapur, she was a strong young girl, and she insisted to her parents she wanted to go to school here. So it was, and Garbhodham samskaras, the impressions can be gotten in the womb. At the time of conception, there's actually a ritual called Garbhodham samskara, where the parents purify their consciousness before conception. And it creates an impression that somehow attracts a particular soul, an elevated soul, to the womb. So Marge Prickett, he's so fortunate. His birth is so great because there was connection with Krishna. Krishna appeared in the womb to protect his mother and created such a joy in that connection that he became Parikshit, the examiner. He began to search that for the rest of his life. So that's how his birth was so great. But because Krishna was the who saved him and protected his mother, we've been introduced to Krishna. And because ultimately the Bhagavatam is about Krishna, first chapter is history of the Bhagavatam, but because it's about Krishna, then somehow in the brilliance of the Bhagavatam's construction, we begin to follow Krishna as he's leaving after the war. Now the war is completed. And when he's leaving, then we see the love that people have for him, the relationship that people have for him as he's leaving. And therefore we're introduced to the perfectional consciousness of life, which is love, rasa vaisaha, love of what? Love of God. And it's connecting the parts of reality to the whole of reality. And the connection is love. The love of God. It's the ultimate. So we see what happens when that energy enters into someone's heart, when they actually have a love means relationship. So here, there's relationship of love. And this is her nephew, but she realizes he's God. And therefore, her love manifests this intense respect. And love always has to be expressed. It's the nature of emotion that has to be expressed. And the expression of the emotion is an emotion that increases the emotion. And that's why the main activity of the spiritual world is kirtan, because it's the expression of emotion. We do kirtan, whatever little emotion we have. As practitioners, we're doing it to achieve a goal. But when we achieve the goal, we'll also do kirtan, but not as a practice to achieve a goal, but as a symptom of attaining the goal. Because we'll want to express, not just we try to get that love, but when we have the love, we express it. We have to express it. It's so natural. And one of the expressions of kirtan is prayer, which glorifies God. And is an expression of humility, because acknowledge and promote someone better than yourself. So we see great devotees, they pray. And now here's, there's a whole set of prayers, and it's just this outpouring of love. That's the symptom. The symptom of love is kirtan. When you love someone, you glorify someone, and the degree that you glorify someone is the degree that you love them. The symptom of love, the main symptom of love, is that you talk about your beloved. And this is very practical, even in terms of the association of devotees. Who is the advanced Vaishnav? The advanced Vaishnav is one who is talking about Krishna. I remember 40 years ago or more, I was in the one of the backyard gardens of the Dallas Temple. Those of you who've been here, been there, know that they it was a poor neighborhood, and they bought up the block, and they owned the houses around the block, and there was one house, the backyard of which, you know, faced the temple property, and there's a picture of me in that. And every evening, Prabhupada would sit on a rocking chair. Sometimes I marvel, and sometimes I remember in Vrindavan, there was only a few people. Only a few people. Like Prabhupada came out of his room once. There was only three people, and I was one of those people. Can you imagine now if Prabhupada came out of his room, that there'd be three people? They couldn't even fill up the guest house. It was empty. We had to put signs and advertise at the train station. Papa was concerned. We had a guest house that no one was coming. So outside of his room, only three people. And Papa said, "Where is everyone?" Papa said, "They're doing service." And Papa said, "Wake them up." A story. Anyway. So lost track of what I thought, but anyway, we'll continue. I'll come back. Anyway, Queen Kunti is expressed her devotion and love. And she's acknowledging the position of God. And this is actually foundational to having love of God, is understanding God. I told you the concept of metaphysical knowledge is called Sambandha Gyan. Those who have been on the Sanghas must understand this. I've said it many, many times. Sambandha Gyan means knowledge of relationship, reality. And basically, there's three things that exist. And then there's division of those three things. What exists is God, the living entity, and the material energy. And to have proper understanding of reality, and I'll show you how that's connected to love of reality, you have to understand the relationship between the components, the relationship between matter and spirit. If you don't understand the relationship between spirit and matter, and you think that matter is life, and therefore you identify with the body and you think you are the enjoyer, then you won't want to love God. The relationship between the soul and God, if you think that the soul is God, why would you worship God? Relationship between God and matter, if you think God is matter, then why would you worship God? Aham sarva shivabhavo matas sarvam pavartite iti bhutvabhajanti mam buddha. Buddha Bhava is the source of the material and spiritual worlds. The wise who know this engage in my devotional service. Buddha Bhava. So she's expressing her love, but realizing that Krishna is God and a worthy object of love. And by expressing the glories of God, it is an impetus to have that respect and that affection. And to understand that the form of God is not a limit to God, but it's one of God's attributes. And denying form in God is limiting God. Say God has no form, it's limiting God. Not limiting God to say God has form. It's one of his attributes. Mayatamidam sarvam, jatavyakta, you know, he's pervading everything by his energy, but he still has a form. He doesn't have the defect of impersonality. I've mentioned that many, many times. So what, you know, the point, just the point is, yeah, there's a limiting him. To deny it limits God. Rather, that's the attribute of God by which he can have loving relationships. And therefore, within the form of God, is everything. Not limiting. Mother Yasoda looked into the form of God and saw the whole universe. And that's the greatness of God. That within God is everything, including that which is outside of God. Anyway, she's expressing this. That Krishna has a form, but every part of that form is like a lotus. And the lotus is a very interesting thing. Transcendence. It's just an amazing thing. If you actually, you know, sometimes in India, you see a pond of lotuses sometimes, I think, driving to Puri, especially a pink lotus. And it's just in the world, but it's just so beautiful. It appears to be transcendental to the world. So we'll read the purport. Here are some of the specific symbols, symbolic marks on the spiritual body of the personality of Godhead, which distinguishes body from all other bodies. So he has a form, but it's not like our form. The qualities that distinguish God from every other living entity, Abhigyasurat, is that he's fully independent and he's omniscient. There are special features of the body of the Lord. The Lord may appear as one of us, but he's always distinct by his specific bodily features. Srimati Kunti claims herself unseated of the Lord because of her being a woman. This is claimed because women, sudras, the labor class, and the dwija bandhus, or the wretched descendants of the higher three classes, are unfit by intelligence to understand transcendental subject matter concerning the spiritual name, fame, attributes of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such persons, although they are unfit to enter into the spiritual affairs of the Lord, can seem as the archer Vigraha, who descends on the material world to distribute favors to the fallen souls, including the above mentioned women, sudras, and bondages. Then Prabhupada's going into another point that that previously Queen Kunti said, this is interesting, you know, how can us less intelligent women understand the Lord? Now, this is a very, very important point that you can only understand someone if someone gives themselves to you. All the power, all the knowledge, all the austerities in the world can't help you understand anyone. There's nothing you can do to understand the person, even if you have total oppressive control over them. You can still only if they choose to give themselves to you. And you only give yourself to another person out of love. When you are convinced of their love, which is expressed through service. And service is not just an activity, it's the expression of a consciousness of love. Everything in bhakti is based on service. Service is the most important thing. We chant for service, and chanting is service, and done in a mood of service. So a point is going to be made here that God is transcendental. What to speak of anybody, but only God can be known if he chooses to reveal himself to you. He can do so out of love. In reciprocation to love, which is expressed through service. Devotional service. There's nothing more important than service. The great devotees are always serving. So wonderful to see a person who is only serving. Bhakti is simply means to want to please God without any separate interest. That's what bhakti is. That you're not acting for yourself. You're acting for God and for God's pleasure. That's what love is. And when you actually have love without separate interest, tashita shunyam jnana karma jnana vritam, that's Uttama Bhakti. Uttama Bhakti means anyabhilashi tashin. There's no other separate interest. And when you try to please God, but you have a personal interest, it's called Mishra Bhakti. If you have an interest for liberation, it's called Jnana Mishra Bhakti. If you have an interest to get something, it's Mishra Bhakti. But pure bhakti is shuddha bhakti, not mixed with anything else. That's just like water. When water is pure, it's not mixed with anything else. Bhakti is honesty. Bhakti is sincerity. And what does sincerity mean? Motive. That's what sincerity is. That's why bhakti is honesty. Bhakti is sincerity. And when you have that in your heart, that love, that dependence, that's how you realize God. That's how you realize bhakti. Bhurijan made a point that in real bhakti, real love, real dependence, that you act. What bhakti means is you, when you deal with an advanced devotee, if you can act in a way in which their heart is melted, then everything will come out. And an advanced devotee, what will come out is his sentiments and feelings for Krishna, which will invoke the same feelings in you. And that's the essence of bhakti. And if you think of someone who's advanced in spiritual life, they don't have much knowledge, not because they're austere, although the weight of transcendental knowledge, will the culmination of transcendental knowledge is that you'll surrender to Guru and Krishna. The weight of transcendental knowledge is that you won't be attached to anything but Krishna. And you'll, and in your other relationships, you'll have love and you'll have affection, but it'll be in relationship to Krishna. When someone takes shelter and has that dependence and has that love, it melts someone's heart. What melts your heart? Love. And if it's from someone who's younger, it's when they take shelter. So here the point he's making is, you know, talking about God is so special. He's transcendental. He's not like an ordinary person. But how do you understand him? And even though Queen Kunti says she's less intelligent, you can realize God by bhakti, by devotion. And then, because fallen souls cannot see anything beyond matter, the Lord condescends to enter each and every one of the innumerable universes as the Garbhaja Vishnu, who grows a lotus stem from the lotus-like depression of the center of his transcendental abdomen, and thus Brahma, the first living being in the universe, is born. Therefore, the Lord is known as the Pankajanabhiya Lord, accepts the Archavigraha form, his transcendental form, in different elements, namely a form within the mind, a form made of wood, a form made of earth, a form made of metal, a form made of jewels, a form made of paint, a form drawn on the sand. As such forms of the Lord are always decorated with the garlands of lotus flowers. There should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple of worship to attract the burning attention of the non-devotees always engaged in material wranglings. So it says that his navel, the first thing, is like a lotus, and the universals created, you know, it's talking about creation here. So there's Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, there's Shura Dakshai Vishnu, and there's Karana. Vishnu means God manifest in the material world as expansions of Balaram. So Karna Dakshay Vishnu means Atva Sargas Visargas Cha, this creation and post-creation. First creation of the material elements, then there's Garbha Dakshay Vishnu, who he expands to assemble those elements, and then Shiradakshay Vishnu, he expands to enter into all of those elements. But here, Garbha Dakshay Vishnu, the creation is beginning to manifest, and he lays down in the causal ocean, and from a lotus stem, from the lotus-like depression, the center is abdomen, then comes Brahma. And therefore, the Lord is known as Pankajanabhi, who's Pankajanabhi, unto the Lord who has a specific depression resembling a lotus flower in the center of his navel. The Lord is called Pankajanabhi. He has his navel. It's an impression like a lotus. And it's described here. And it's described that that very lotus from that lotus, then God manifests the Arjagraha form in different elements. So the Archavigraha, or the deity, because Garbha Dakshay Vishnu assembles the elements, Karna Dakshay Vishnu manifests the elements, then Garbha Dakshay Vishnu assembles the elements, in different elements he can manifest if they are formed in particular ways. Just like there's mantra, there's sounds that are formed in different ways that God manifests. And he sets the rules, just as he sets the rules in all elements. If you look at any element, they have certain properties. So you have the element of metal that has the property of being transformed into fire when in contact with fire. So there's certain, just as there's certain elements of sound that can be transformed, just like there's certain material elements that can be transformed into fire. Sounds that can be transformed, can be God-ized, Krishna-ized, Ishwar-ized, just as the iron becomes fire. So he's saying there's different forms, just like there's forms of sound that can become God. There's forms of the object of material objects that can become God. And they name them. There's a form of God within the mind. There's a particular form that can become spiritualized. So you can do it with the elements of mind. You can do it with the elements of wood. You can do it with elements of earth. You can do elements of metal. You can do elements of jewel. Or form can be made of paint or earth. Or drawn on the sand. So somehow God's sets these rules, as much as a government sets the rules of which elements and colors can be combined together to be a post office. There's certain elements created by God that become a God box. They have the power of God, just like a post office box colored and authorized in a particular way has the power of the government behind it, and therefore it can receive messages and send them all around the world. An ordinary box has no potency. So in the same way, there's elements of God And God is authority, just as the government authority, and God authorizes that this particular form can be invested with his power. Just like you make another type of box, and the government doesn't approve of its form and color, then the government doesn't empower that box. So in the same way, God empowers, he authorizes certain forms. This is his jurisdiction or power, where he will manifest himself personally. Right? All such forms of the Lord are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, and there should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple of worship to attract the burning attention of non-devotees always engaged in material wranglings. God is so kind that these particular forms are decorated and they inspire a particular atmosphere that attracts one to God. Somehow or other, someone becomes attracted. It opens his heart to certain feelings and sentiments. And when your heart becomes open to certain sentiments and feelings, then in that mood, you can experience God. The meditator's worship is formed within the mind. Therefore, the Lord is merciful even to the women, sujas, and dvija bandhus, provided they agree to visit the temple of worship in different forms made by idolaters. As alleged by some men with a poor found of knowledge, all the great acharyas establish such temples of worship in all places just to favor the less intelligent. And one should not pose himself as transcending the stage of temple worship. One is actual in the category of the sujas and the women or less. So the deity, it's a fact that the deity was established because people weren't qualified to just see God in the hearts of others. Therefore, in the Treta Yuga, the verses mentioned in the Bhagavatam, in the Treta Yuga, then the sages established the form of the deity to help people repose their love in God in an absolute manifestation of God that can instill that type of faith. It's worship of God. He's manifest in that way. And even though it's established for the less intelligent on one platform, one shouldn't think that he can transcend that and just worship God and manifest God without that visible help. And this is really an important point of bhakti, that you have to act according to your qualification. I was thinking about that in prayers. If you have no devotion, then you can pray for devotion. If you have devotion, you can pray for spontaneous devotion. And if you have spontaneous devotion, then you can pray for understanding. You can act according to your adhikari, your qualification. And therefore, at a very advanced stage of devotional service, when your heart is naturally has emotional feelings towards God, devotional feelings towards God, then you can follow your heart. You can follow your heart. But if your heart is not pure, you follow your heart, reinforce the false ego. Therefore, you have to follow your intelligence. That's called Vaidhi Bhakti. You have to have rules. You have to act, not just according to your heart, but what is right. Your heart's full of love, you can follow your heart. But if your heart's not full of love, then you have to follow what's right. And the extent that that love is missing is the extent that your devotion has to be rule-based. The same thing with the form of God. It's so beautiful to have a form of God which you're attracted to. Recently, I got a new deity. And I'm just sitting. It's just so beautiful. It's so beautiful. I had a form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Gambira. And a long story. It went to, I never want to mention the country because where these people are, it's dangerous, but it went to a country in the Middle East. And since that form went to the Middle East, really, the preaching has just expanded. And it's just expanded. But recently I've been hankering for that same form. And I went to the same carver who made it 20 years ago. But now his hands are very shaky. And they're very shaky and he can't do it. He tried, and his ego is such that he couldn't admit it, but it was very crude. And I got a picture of it. And where I'm living in Vrindavan, back at the place I was, Giriraj Swami's house, my neighbors, they're pure devotees. They're Nishtha and Vrindarani, his daughter. They're pure devotees. It's the mother, she wakes up, she walks around Vrindavan every day, without fail, even if it's the winter, it's at 5 o'clock in the morning, barefoot. That's every morning at 5 o'clock, there's a 2.5-hour walk. And then when she gets back and she finishes her rounds, she serves all day without stop. And no matter what she's doing, temple service, this, if I'm next door, she says, Marj, I have to make you lunch. And happily, she brings in lunch. It's just, I can't describe how good it is. Rice, dal, chapati, sabji, it just goes all day. And her daughter, again, trained in Vrindavan, is just, she does, is being one of the best Odissi dancers in the world, literally. She paints deity. So I show her this little form, and I wasn't satisfied with it. I said, can you paint it? And I thought, you know, maybe a little around the lips and things. It's wood. She said, would you like me to paint it, touch it up, or paint the whole thing? I said, what do you think? She said, if I paint it, it will come, I can bring it alive. So she went for 4 days just listening to Gaura Lila, become inspired, and when the deity came back, it is the most beautiful deity of Mahaprabhu you've ever seen. So I'm sitting here right now looking at this deity, and it's so attractive. So it's God's mercy. I really have to go because we're staying up late, and the people of the house are staying up late to make me something. Would anybody just like to say hello today? They probably can't say hello because it's work. Let me just see if I can do something too. Would anyone like to say hello?
Hi, Bo Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
So nice to hear from you. Thank you. Good. I'm so happy that this medium is working. It's going to give me more facility to give class. I'm doing it through Skype. Anybody
Excellent.
Else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, Hare Krishna. Thank you so much.
I wonder if you can bring that deity back with you in March.
I will. It's beautiful.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Hananand Street, obeisances.
Thank you so much. Wow, this reception is so good. Anybody else? Okay, we'll just end for today because I really have to get going. Thank you very much. Bunch of Kopa Dhruva Skippers.